Hello, this is Douglas Frank, and I'm part of the Spotlight on Members team. And I'm here today with Michael Miller, member of Nalanda Bodhi, Colorado. Thank you, Michael, for joining me this early evening.
Sure. Sounds like fun.
Let's see if we can. So how is your health? How are you doing?
Well, it's up and down. It's been 9 months since I was diagnosed with this multiple myeloma, which is a form of blood cancer. And I went through chemo for 6 months, then into the hospital for three weeks, where I had a stem cell transplant. Ever since then, I've been recovering. So my energy level is not very good. You know, I get tired really easily, but I am feeling better generally than I was. So it's improving.
Oh, good.
Little by little.
Good. And so you're able to do more and be a little bit more active?
A little bit. Yeah. Because of the virus, I haven't been out. So, and I've been trying to stay away from public places, although, you know, we have visited friends and small groups and stuff, but I have not been to any public spaces. So I have to be careful about that because my immune system is really compromised at this point.
Right. Yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, I go out for walks every day and that's really great. And, I use hiking poles for support because my back is the multiple myeloma really compromised my bones too. So I ended up fracturing my spine in four places over the course of this illness. So my bones have been really weak, and that's one thing where I'm really trying to recover some muscle and bone structure.
Okay. Yeah. So you're slowly getting better or feeling
slowly getting better. Yeah.
That's good.
Coming out of a long illness. And I think I'm getting better. Definitely.
Okay. So could you share with us how you came to the Buddha Dharma?
Well, it happened a long time ago. The roots of it were in high school when I took this humanities class and we studied world religions and we were studying Taoism, and that really turned me on. And besides being turned on by drugs at that point also, and having some experiences where, you know, I felt like the normal educational system and religion that I was being fed were not very beneficial or meaningful to me. So I started looking for other things. And I had a friend who also was on this journey and had started meditating I'm from Pennsylvania. And so he would go up to the New York Zen Center and meditate with them. And so he taught me to meditate. That was when I was about 18.
Okay.
Then I came out to Colorado and I went to school here. And I was a religious studies major at that time, so I was really interested in religions.
And this is University of Colorado?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Right. And I was looking around for, you know, a group to meditate with and similar to Zen groups that I've heard about, but all I could find was this Tibetan group. This was crazy colors like this and not exactly what I had envisioned for a nice, quiet, meditation group. And at the same time, I was a student at the University of Colorado in religious studies, and Chogyam Trungpa was a member of the faculty there, a visiting faculty. Mm. And so I actually took his class on Tibetan Buddhism 300, got really involved in the class and turned on by the class. And so So soon afterwards, I became a student in that That was in 73. I was 20 when I became a student, and that was the exact same time frame that I met Eileen. And so we sort of began this journey together, living in what was pre-MARPA house at the time. It was a student co-op, and the Buddhists had bought this or had rented it, and they started moving in when I was there. So I made some friends with the Sangha and joined what was then Karma Tsong.
So you were an early student of Trungpa Rinpoche.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone who ever studied with Trungpa Rinpoche at University of Colorado. I mean, he just did that, I think, for a very short period of time. So that was a unique.
He did. Yeah, he did do that for a short period of time.
Okay.
And it was a crazy class because it was, normally set up for 20 students maybe, and instead, 100 people came every night, from the local Sangha, and he had his teaching assistants, the senior members of the Sangha, so.
Okay.
So that was really interesting to see it in that environment, because it was very different teaching from the other classes I were taking, which were mostly academic related, looking at religion from a distance, and he was giving a very personal view of it.
Is there anything from that class with him that comes into mind that sort of propelled you into Tibetan Buddhism?
Well, just the atmosphere of it was crazy.
Like how so?
Well, because there were, 100 people there, and only a handful or a couple of handfuls were actual students. And the rest were, a bunch of rowdy people from the organization that came to hear him speak. And, these were not people that, you would typically think of a Zen group or something where, people would be silent and reverent in a way, or there was just everywhere Trungpa went, there was craziness and wildness and an atmosphere of high energy, not meditative in a way,
Is there a teaching from Trungpa Rinpoche that is sort of your North Star from that period of time?
Or
from when you were studying with him?
Not from that period of time. It was much later, actually, after he died, and I left the Sangha for a while and then came back and met Kempo Rinpoche and then met Punlap Rinpoche. Those two became my North Star, much more than Trungpa Rinpoche. Trungpa Rinpoche, in his time, I wasn't that close to him. I used to drive him around and stuff, but, generally, the teaching that he taught was much more, like I said, atmospheric rather than particular. And so the teachings that I go by now, the North Star that I have, are from Kempo Rinpoche and Punlap Rinpoche.
Is there any particular slogan from them that comes to you on a regular basis or irregular basis?
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I think of constantly is Kempo Rinpoche's teaching to look at everything as illusion. And the song that comes to mind, which also Lama Tempo uses a lot, is the "Like a Dream, Like an Illusion." That song, "Like a Dream, Like an Illusion." That I use a lot in my life. And it's a really interesting teaching because it spans so many levels. You know, I mean, certainly it's about, you know, absolute mind, it being like an illusion, like this life is an illusion, you know. Mm-hmm. But I use it in situations where there's like a high klesha activity or, you know, something like that, where you can think of this teaching and it sort of distances you from the immediacy of the klesha in a very relation, you know, relative sense. And then it's much deeper than that too, because it goes into, you know, the idea that, well, if this is illusion, then I must be illusion. So, you know, so it stops your mind at the same time as distancing you from whatever, you know, particular klesha you happen to be experiencing. So that to me is very much a teaching that I go by. And also, right before I went into the hospital, I talked to Bunlap Rinpoche, and he said, treat everything like the momentary nature that it is, and you know, look at everything as momentary. Mm. And when I was in the hospital, I used that teaching many nights, because I had insomnia and I couldn't go to sleep, and the nurses were coming in all the time, and
so I
had no choice. This momentary nature of mind was just going on and on and on and on and on and on and on, and trying to settle in that and see, you know, and settle in that and just, but there was, you know, there was no way to separate myself from it. But if I could just look at it as a stream, which I occasionally could do,
right,
it was very helpful.
Everyone I know who has gone through cancer and cancer treatment have all said it's a really tough road.
Yeah.
It's a tough road, just in terms of the physical aspect of it and then the mind that comes with it. So it sounds like these two teachings between Kempo's Like a Dream and Rinpoche's, like, yeah, it's like a dream and it's just momentary.
Yes, it is. It's momentary. Very, very
momentary. Yeah.
Which is what, you know, it's what we learn about in meditation all the time, you know, but looking at it that way in the post-meditation realm is, you know, it's difficult to do, very difficult to, but at the same time, it's there all the time.
Right, exactly. So
you don't need to look at it for all that much time. Just stop and glance and carry on.
Yeah. If it was easy, everybody would be doing it.
Yeah, right.
So is there any activities, any passions that during this period of COVID and during this period of your recovery that you've been able to engage in?
Not really. Just getting better. And, you know, Eileen is really helping me out with that. She's supporting me, but I am still doing my, I am still part of Natartha, so I'm, you know, I had a part-time job before this whole thing started of being the co-director of Natartha, but since then I've been on kind of a hiatus, but I am still trying to be involved, and I'm taking, also taking Natartha classes, so that, in fact, that was a wonderful, wonderful thing that happened when I was in the hospital. I started, Natartha started when I was in the hospital, and so I was looking at Rinpoche's classes and other classes, and then when I got out, it was this continuity that Natartha provided me when from being in there and then coming out of it, and it was really terrific.
Oh, what a blessing! What a blessing to have that.
Right, definitely was.
I mean, it's almost like a life preserver in some sense, just to help keep you
right
floating, exactly. floating on the water.
Right. So you know, other than that, I'm not really a hangout during the day. I do try and practice, but you know, I don't do much. Actually, my energy level's pretty low, and so. You know, after a while, I have to lie down. I can sit up for a certain amount of time, and then I have to lie down, take a nap. You know,
right.
like I did before we started this process.
Exactly. I woke you up from a nap. Is there anything else you would like to share? Conversation?
Oh, well, you know, just to say that Sangha has been really very meaningful for me during this time as well. People have supported me in taking me to doctor visits and brought us food and bread, homemade bread, and visited and, you know, take walks with me and stuff like that. That's been really wonderful, really. So I'm very appreciative of that.
Sangha has been a jewel, as they say.
It has been, definitely. Yeah.
Lovely. Lovely.
Can
I ask, I'd like to ask one more question about how did you meet Phunlop Rinpoche?
Well, I had tried to get an interview with the Sakyong. I re-entered the Shambhala community and did finish Nundro and did Abhisheka and all that stuff. And then I really felt a strong need to talk to like a realized master. And so I tried to get a meeting with Mipham Rinpoche and the organization just blew me off, which really did not sit well with me. I mean, they didn't say, oh, you know, maybe we'll put you on a waiting list or something like that. They were just like, no, no, he's too busy for you. And so at the same time, I was working with a friend at a company who was a student of Phunlop Rinpoche. And I told him this story. And he said, well, maybe I can get you an interview with my teacher. Would you like that? And I said, yeah, sure, you know, and so they called me up on a Friday afternoon. I was working and they said, can you be here in an hour? And I'm like, okay, sure. So, you know, I rushed home and put on a tie at that point. You know, there was a certain formality to it. So, and went to meet Phunlop Rinpoche, and it was a delightful meeting. I had no intention of becoming a student at that time, but we talked mostly about databases, which is what I was doing for a living. We didn't talk much about Dharma at all. But after that meeting, I really felt like something, like I made a connection, like something, like this was the real thing. And if I were to continue the spiritual path, I would need to follow him. And so I went to a Treasury of Knowledge retreat, and that's where I really, you know, became his student. And
what year was this?
That was 2001.
Okay.
Yeah. And also a difficult year when, you know, I was working for a high-tech company and it went under, and so they owed me a lot of money, and, you know, it was really difficult, and I couldn't find work. Then I met Rinpoche, which was a wonderful thing, and I was still not working. And then 9/11 happened, which the market dropped out of, the job market completely died. So that was a difficult year, and you know, I felt like this new teacher was really bridging that gap at that time, and I had no intention of wanting a new Sangha at the time. I just wanted a new teacher, but the Sangha came along with it. So And to my everlasting gratefulness, you know. So yeah, and he really sucked me in, and I had all sorts of jobs because it was a small sangha and they needed people. And so I went through, you know, the same jobs everybody else does, finance and sangha director. And then I went on to work on national stuff and was co-chairman of Londa Buddy National for a couple of years. Then sangha director, national practice director and local practice director. And so I've pretty much held every job, but now I'm, well, I still have one, the Natartha thing, but that may be winding down. I'm not sure yet. Mm. But so that's been wonderful too, to have, to be able to help in such a way that because in the Shambhala community, it was so large, I never, you know, I was sort of invisible, but in a small sangha like ours, you know, it was really wonderful that I could help out in so many different ways.
Yeah, and you've worn many hats, and you've worn them well.
Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much.
Oh, yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh, and also just, I'm so grateful for that I had a partner in this journey the whole way along, and with Eileen, and continuing now, even more so, you know, her help. And so, mm-hmm. you know, she's so supportive. So that's kept me on the path. Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. The two of you do really well together. And your activities in Londa Bodhi, Colorado, and larger mandala, the national mandala, very admirable to me. So thank you for that.
Yeah,
thank
you're welcome. It's been a pleasure. You.
So I salute you and I thank you. And may your health continue to improve.
Thank you.